Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, we'll be talking with Elo Sonal Apti about retail technology. We'll discuss Windows versus Android, what's unified commerce, and what's next in technology for retail. As always, our recurring segments, the value to the VAR, and what's tech connecting with us. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
Right, so we want to welcome in Sonal Apti from Elo. Sonal is the VP of Retail and Hospitality Solutions. Sonal, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Sonal, tell us a little bit about yourself. Yeah, what's led you to where you are now? What exactly do you do at Elo? Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Absolutely. So maybe I'll start at the top in that Elo is a retail and hospitality technology company at its very core. Has been in business for 40 plus years. And we build platforms that are essentially one architecture that serves every possible retail and hospitality touchpoint. As far as I'm concerned, I have the fun job of being the front of all the stuff that the fun stuff that Elo does and the innovation that as a company we do. My prior role actually stemmed from being a product manager for point of sale and self-service. So unfortunately, I've heard that that's a place in an industry where once you get in, you can't get out. But here I am. And you know, what really defines me is actually the fact that I am born and brought up in India.
And awesome. And are you a techie? So now, I mean, you know, do you, obviously you're in technology, but sometimes people who are in technology aren't really overly techie. Are you a techie type person though? Do you like, you know, wearables and things like that?
I do. I am very much a techie person. I wouldn't say I'm the first adopter. My husband is much more techie, so I get to experience first what he uses and then decide. But I will tell you what I'm more interested in and more fascinated with is how technology solves some of the simplest human pain points and how people are pushing those limits. That's really what I'm in the game for.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could agree with you.
Yeah.
So we wanted to talk to you a little bit about retail technology. It sounds like obviously you've got the background for it and the understanding of what's happening out there. I want to kick things off by talking a little bit about point of sale and obviously, there's been some big shifts in technology, especially software, particularly around Windows versus Android. I think, you know, Windows obviously was kind of the model for all things software for a very long time in a lot of different industries. And we're starting to see across the board this shift over to Android. So I kind of wanted your opinion about Windows versus Android. You know, what's better? Why is the change happening? And maybe why should it happen?
Sure. Maybe allow me to go a little bit and a little bit back in its evolution. A couple of things kind of happened simultaneously over, I would say, the last 5 to 7 years. One is that POS kind of extended itself from behind the cash register to pretty much anywhere. So it's still a point of sale, a transaction that you do on your mobile, and it's still a transaction you do on self-service, and it's still a transaction that you do at the checkout. So POS kind of extended itself and started touching everyone, not just the employee who was behind the cash register. That was one. The second is that the likes of Square, and I commend Square for this, is they really disrupted the space coming at it from a completely different perspective of a micro and a mini merchant and said, I will make POS easier for you. You don't have to worry about the hardware software payment. It's one thing from me. It's really simple to set up. And it's so intuitive that you're not going to spend that $10,000 upfront to set up your shop. And when both of these things collided, the third thing to add to that is the generational change. Millennials are now 35% of the workforce in the US alone. And they are spending or supposed to spend $1 trillion in 2020. I'm sure they're behind because of the pandemic, but $1 trillion, they're a major shopper. And what that's done is it's changed how people view intuitive technology, whether they're in the workforce making decisions on infrastructure or whether they're a shopper and demand the experience of being really intuitive, or they're the employee at the cash register and now want that familiarity. These three things, I think, collided to turn itself into a shift change where mobile architectures and especially Android started to show up in retailers and in hospitality giants as potentially their next point of sale. I'll stop there and see if you have questions, but otherwise I can continue down the path of Windows versus Android and what we see in the marketplace.
Well, I think you certainly have touched on a couple things there that that we've discussed as well. Fascinating how behavior, you know, definitely plays a role in this when you talk about generational behavior and just the comfort level that the younger generation has with technology versus other generations, older generations that aren't, you know, necessarily. Of course, we're recording this right now during a pandemic, and that seems to have really increased the timeline. Well, I'm sorry, expressly condensed the timeline that a lot of these technologies are being adopted. So, you know, that's interesting. But Sonal, you know, I am fascinated by your point number two, which is the mobility option. And in my mind, and I'm not overly knowledgeable on operating systems, but I am perplexed at how a company like Microsoft can let that opportunity go. I mean, it or not address it, I think, as well as that maybe they could have to adopt the opportunities that are out there, not just in the hospitality and retail space, but in our lives in general. I mean, you know, to have a mobile device, a mobile phone, there is no there's not a viable Windows option. I mean, how it's just perplexing, you know, that happened.
For so such maybe, a juggernaut. It, you
know. A huge juggernaut. Yeah. I mean, just huge juggernaut on the ERP side. So maybe walk down, what are your thoughts there on why that happened and why Android got such great adaptability over the last 5 to 7 years? Isn't that fascinating?
It really is. And you know, I got taught this history lesson from a mentor who has been in this industry for 25 plus years. When he started talking about 4690. I don't know if that means anything to you, but 4690 was one of those IBM juggernauts way back when, 20 years ago, before Windows showed up. And it was essentially an OS plus hardware plus software specifically built for retail. And it was an entirely closed system. And when Windows really launched their first product, Windows XP, I think it was, or even before that, that's when they created this arts committee along with the likes of Epson, where they created an open platform system so that people didn't have to be stuck with one platform up and down the chain. Instead, they could use hardware that was quote unquote agnostic to the software, to the POS software that would be used, right? This was Microsoft led when they launched Windows. They basically went out to the world and said, Microsoft is an open architecture for hospitality and retail, not that closed architecture that 4690 gave you, right? 20 years later, Android did the same thing. Android came in and said, wait a minute, we are a completely open architecture, AOSP, you don't have to pay for our license. You can go make it your own however you choose. And now that entire same, that exact same story of allowing retailers and hospitality giants to have control over their destiny has come back a full circle just with a different OS. Why Microsoft missed it, I don't know if it was a miss in strategy or if it was deliberate, But I will say that they are doing an outstanding job on the cloud side now on Azure.
Just about to go there. Yeah.
And but they've completely taken their foot off the pedal and on the OS side. And frankly, when they announced Windows 7 going end of life and Windows Pods Ready 7 going end of life that this year, it actually created a time where companies rethought of whether they should go with Windows after this round or go to Android or some other OS system, even Linux. So to some extent, them talking about end of life of Windows 7 and Pods Ready 7 accelerated a little bit that thinking around adopting Android in the environment.
So what is the thought process as a manufacturer then? You know, what do you guys talk about or as it relates to OS? I mean, I think your point's very valid that Microsoft has re-engaged in the cloud. And the cloud is not going anywhere. But the cloud's not perfect for everybody, just like any solution out there. And I think when I take a step back and think about it from a manufacturer's perspective and having to deal with different operating systems. I mean, the only connection I can make is from a Marcom individual and trying to develop content for different browsers. I mean, that's already a pain enough, you know? I mean, it looks this way in this browser. It doesn't look that way in Firefox, type of a thing. As a manufacturer, though, can you give us some insight into, or I don't even know if you get into that, Sonal, about some of the things that you're thinking about as it relates to the operating system and what you need to manufacture to accommodate these different things, like a pop-up Linux that might, where you might have an end user that's using that. What are some of your thoughts there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think as a manufacturer, what Elo has done is we've created platforms in all of the OSs, and I think five, we definitely led the Android space. I would say from products that are now in their third or fourth generation. So we've obviously learned a lot about Android and the enterprise environment. And we've made ourselves better and better and better and much more robust and much more enterprise ready as the years have gone by. So as I sit here today, I look at our product portfolio, whether it's Android or whether it's Windows or whether it's Linux, it's to me, oftentimes OS can still feel like a religion that people are very passionate about. And it's never our goal to get customers going from one to the other or back. We're simply trying to educate our customers about the pros and cons of using one versus the other. And those pros and cons are kind of simple if you boil it down to the fact of, what does every retailer need in their store, right? The POS needs first familiarity for both the users as well as for the employees. And you can argue that the market's going towards Android because that generation is much more familiar. You don't see a whole lot of Windows developers getting graduation degrees. They're learning Java, they're learning Android, right? So that familiarity kind of trends itself towards Android. But there's a whole host of other things to think about, like life cycle. There is no doubt that Windows has established itself with a life cycle of 10 plus years. And retailers are used to having their point of sale gear out there for 10 years. But that picture is changing. I think our Android life cycles, the way we commit, easily 5 to 7 years. But they're cheaper, so there's a total cost of ownership around it. But it's much more nimble and flexible, so you can push your updates to POS. It used to be that POS updates happened 2 or 3 times a year in terms of feature releases. Now they could be happening once a month, once a week even. That's how fast things are evolving out in the street. Then you have to think about peripheral connectivity. It is clear that Windows and Linux do far better with peripheral connectivity because there's 25, 30 years of work done by different manufacturers to get us there, right? Android doesn't have that depth yet, but it's starting to get there. Even as a company, we've spent the last 2, 3 years writing SDKs for these different peripherals. And the hardest part, I would say, and the most amount of education that we do when it comes to OS is Windows is a known entity. When you get Windows 10 on your computer, you know exactly what you're getting, you know, down to the Intel chipset and the Intel features and functions that relate itself to Microsoft. Android, because it's flexible, the flexibility is its greatest strength, and it's also its greatest weakness. So you really need to hand and manufacturer who understands the depth of that flexibility and can create that robustness and that customization that's right for you in your environment. And we find that much of our Android conversation is exactly around that. It's how do you customize? How do you secure? How do you deploy in a way that I can have a long-term 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 year roadmap with an OS like that?
So many good things there. If I could ask, and John, I know you want to go on to other topics, but there's just too much meat on the bone here.
Yeah, there is.
Let's talk about security a little bit, Sonal, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because obviously early on, and even still today, and you just touched on it, you know, having a secure solution that's going to last years, not months type of a thing, clearly an advantage that Windows had in the fact that everybody in IT understood the security. No, it wasn't perfect, but they knew the game. They knew the playing field. Not maybe so much the case in Android, where you have an open architecture and things of that nature. So just what are your thoughts as it relates to security and what we're seeing now on the Android side? Are people feeling a little bit better about that, you know, from a developer standpoint?
They are. And again, it's these millennials who have entered the workforce, and they understand the depth of how Google is creating that Android kernel to begin with, and how Qualcomm adds their Linux kernel and how Google's Android solution sits on top of that. There's that familiarity and that technical strength has increased very greatly in the environment today. And so there's a much deeper understanding of what security means and where those places are where, you know, retailers have to be careful. The thing that we talk about as Elo, from a security perspective, security has to be a culture for your manufacturer, especially when you're talking about a custom version of Android. And from our perspective, it's our cloud solutions and our Android build is built around, for example, PCI's 12 architecture principles. So it's not so much about the OS itself. It's about what process and procedures and controls do you have in place to build and manage that OS, because it is a recurring theme, every patch delivered. Then it's managing the security patches very, very aggressively. So Google does a fantastic job at putting out these exposures, and we grab them, we review them on a very detailed basis, and then we aggressively work on patches to put it out there. But then it's about knowing that ecosystem. It's about understanding where Google puts its effort, where Qualcomm puts its effort. And this is why we've been fairly successful with the one architecture platform, because you really don't want to manage 1,000 different varieties on your Android, on Android OS in your environment. You want to manage one, maybe two. And a platform with the same engine under the hood gives you that. It gives you that one OS, much like, it's almost like taking the Microsoft pause ready embedded concept and using that in an Android kernel.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. And another thing that, if I could touch on this real quick, that I found fascinating about what you just said, or maybe I'm extrapolating, what are developers, you know, and I know you guys are very, very much in tune with the software development community. We often talk about it at Blue Star, how it's a bit of the Wild West, mm-hmm. meaning so many developers out there. And we've talked about the statistics, you know, whereas there might be 100,000 software development companies in the marketplace today, by 2027, 1 million software development companies. So as a manufacturer, I can imagine that just, you know, that probably just makes your head spin from wanting to be able to address that community. So I guess the question, Sonal, would be, What are developers asking of you? I mean, are you seeing a difference in what they're asking as far as your SDKs are concerned? Or what is that community saying to you at this point in time?
Great question. And frankly, as a company, I would say much of our success depends on this community of developers and of resellers, because as you know, Elo is it's all about the partner ecosystem. We're just the OEM at the end of the day. So these listeners and your customers are really what makes our platform tick, if it does it all out and there in the world. For the software community, absolutely. They're moving at a pace that's absolutely amazing and inspiring, to be honest.
Yes.
There's a lot of niche in the solutions, whether it's POS, whether it's loyalty, whether it's magic mirrors and fitting rooms, you can name, there's a solution and a niche for everything. And when it needs to be combined with hardware, especially if it's Android, it has to be touched. That Android, that SDK has to be received, it has to be tested. What we see works for us is we have a group of individuals who just do this for a living and do it amazing, in that they build relationships with this community. Part of the things we provide from a manufacturer's perspective is giving them samples and gear to start testing in their lab, because you can't really do much without that. And providing them access actually to directly our engineering group and our technical support experts, because that's who these developers need to talk to early on to get that solution ticking. So those are the two things that we've seen that are the needs of this ISV community, and we're certainly taking that to heart. And there really is no other way to do it. I mean, it's not necessarily a secret sauce. There is no other way to do it.
Yeah.
That was very insightful, actually, because I'm not gonna pretend like I understood exactly the Windows versus Android debate, but I feel like that makes a lot more sense to me now than it did before. You know, I kind of want to ask you, go back almost to actually where the very beginning, when you kind of talked about some of the motivating factors behind these changes. And one of them that you mentioned, and Dean jumped on it too, was mobility. Mm-hmm. And the idea of getting out from behind the cash register, that's not just about standing behind the POS, but it's also getting out onto the floor, meeting your customers where they are, and also meeting them where they're familiar with technology. Mm-hmm. And I think that lends itself to a conversation about the omnichannel, BOPIS, clienteling. So now I saw on, I think, a LinkedIn post that you put out, or somewhere else, maybe you put a blog up that talked about the unified commerce. And I kind of want you to explain that in your terms of what that means.
Sure. So unified commerce, and I think, in fact, people are now calling it harmonized commerce. But really, it's no magic. It's different buzzwords to say the same thing, which is your customer, that end customer, that shopper, that person who comes in to eat, is absolutely the center and the heart of who you are and what you should be. Now you take that customer and you see how that customer has changed. That customer now likes to sit at their home and browse products online first. Then they, or they're influenced by a friend or someone on a social channel to go look at a product that may be interesting. So it doesn't always stem from a need, but they start at home, they take that journey over to their mobile, sometimes they come back to the desktop, then they maybe enter the store while they're out with their girlfriends at the mall, if they ever make it there, right? And then from there, they decide they're not quite ready yet. They come back, they continue that journey online. Sometimes they may call the help desk and ask a couple questions about the product, the size, the fitting, something. What I'm describing is what's familiar to you and familiar to me every time we shop, right? So why should I not expect that the brand that I'm interacting with actually knows who I am every step of the way. Why is it that when I'm at home and online, the person can recognize I'm Sonal and I looked at these five things in the past 5 days, but when I walk into the store, the associate or nobody has any clue who I am and what I just looked at home. And that breakdown, I think, is mind-boggling in this day and age, if you think about it, right? But if you put that customer in the center, you'll see that customer wants a unified journey. And part of giving that unified journey is to have a commerce platform that actually has one source of truth. Because if you know who Sonal is and you can recognize her on mobile, on online, and when she enters the store, that's unified. When she starts shopping, and if she can say that there is a piece of available inventory online or in the warehouse or in store, and it's not there, that's a poor experience. So that means inventory has to have one source of truth. It means pricing has to have one source of truth. That one source of truth is what I tend to call unified commerce. It's a very big concept when you start to implement it, but in its theory, it's really simple. It's one source of truth for all commerce.
Fascinating. Do you think that will get, as I listen to you, you know, and I think a lot of people wonder or assume, shall I say, that lots of the tier one entities, whether it's retail or hospitality, that's where these folks are playing. You know, this this unified or harmonized commerce, that's just for the big guys and gals. But I don't know that that's necessarily the case. You know, I think that you'll start to see this down to the small to medium-sized business, and that's how they're going to increase their brand equity, increase their customer loyalty, things like that. Right, Sonal? I mean, I think that's kind of where there's hope for the SMB, right?
Well, it's more than hope. I think in many of the sub-verticals, they're actually leading some of that space. And talking again about the ISV community that's out there, the software community, they're doing an amazing job creating products that are nimble enough that start to connect the dots with each other. So you can take a simple example, which is now turned into a huge company, Toast, who started with a point of sale and a payment platform, but then along the way they've added labor scheduling to it, then they've added loyalty to it, they've added delivery to it, right? So they're now creating these multi-channel operational capabilities. You can take retailers and ISVs like Lightspeed, for example, where they've also taken the online shopping and converged it and merged it with the physical shopping along with those loyalty programs. So SMBs and the newer ISVs who cater to this marketplace has actually done an even further job. In fact, I would say tier one retailers have struggled to get there because they have so much baggage of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been wondering to myself, and maybe the three of us can make $1 million off of this idea, or maybe somebody's already gotten it out there. But I was thinking of the perfect confluence because, you know, one thing that when you talk about the overall shopping experience, and maybe I'm a little bit old school, but I don't think so, because my 17-year-old daughter believes the same thing. Meaning when I'm shopping online or you have the virtual experience, it's still not the same as, now I'm speaking about like clothes buying. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as going in and fitting it. You know, I cannot tell you, and we've all been through it, how many times we've ordered something from Amazon or you name the online retailer, you get it in, it's not quite the right size, whatever. But I'm waiting for that SMB experience where I'm shopping online and I just put things in a virtual fitting room and they're just going to queue it up to me. And then I go in, next time I go in, maybe it's via appointment, maybe not. But there are all the clothes that I was browsing for. And now I can see if they actually fit. So that's a unified, to me, that would be the ultimate unified experience. I was online, browsing. oh, these are in my fitting room, my virtual fitting room. And so the next time Dean goes there, oh, there you go. Here you go. Here are the 9 things that you were looking at. Oh, this one fits great. That one didn't. You know, that's kind of that experience. But I think that's where we're getting to, right, Sonal?
And by the way, all statistics actually talk to the fact that you're not old school, and that's how most people think. 80% of the dollars of retail spend dollars are actually still spent in store. 80%. So we spend a lot of time talking about online and growth in online, and the pandemic is certainly going to create a shift change in that, because the pandemic has taught all generations to work through it online. But even then, you can't take away the fact that 80% of the dollars are actually spent in the store at the end of the day. Yes, it's all influenced by this unification, right? So it's influenced by the digital channels. But eventually, the person is going into the store for that tactical feel, look, smell before they buy.
Yeah. You can't eliminate that 80% overnight. It's just not that easy. Dean, you kind of hit on, we talked about the virtual fitting room, and that kind of lends itself a little bit to even some next level technology that might be out there, which, you know, one of the ones that I find fascinating is the idea of the virtual mirror, where maybe you do go into a store and they still don't exactly have what you need. Maybe they've got other colors, other options, things you want to try out, and you can step into a fitting room and actually use a virtual mirror that takes an image of you and through, I guess that would be augmented reality, helps you see what clothes look like when you're wearing them, you know, so you can actually see what it might look like on your body and make that decision then, do I order this? Do I ask them to ship it here to the store? But Sadal, I wanted to ask you then, like, you know, is that some kind of technology that you do see coming fairly close down the line? And what other next tech do you think is out there in the retail world?
So I do see a lot of interest in fitting room technology, and it's not the same that you described. It's not a virtual mirror of sorts where it will portray what I will look like without having to try it on. But the concept is kind of similar in that there is a very high correlation of dollars spent when somebody actually makes it inside the fitting. And so the idea is, once that person is inside the fitting room, you know the correlation is really high. Now, how do you make the best experience over there so that the actual conversion is high as well? And those fitting room applications, some of them are virtual mirrors or magic mirrors. Some of them are just simple, you know, call somebody to get me a different size, different color type of thing. So real simple in its application. The thing with fitting mirrors is, or fitting room applications, is that, you know, every store, just like they have 8 to 10 POS lanes, they have 10 to 15 to 20 fitting rooms. And so the cost of a solution, if you looked at one virtual mirror, that costs maybe $8,000 to $10,000. Putting it in many different places becomes a very high, you know, high dollar investment. Versus a simple tech that does the same thing, betters that experience inside the fitting room. That's I think what physical retailers are gearing towards. Now, something interesting you said, and that I have seen last year, we met or heard from a company called Fitmatch. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're very new. But they have something unique. They have physical locations, a couple of physical locations today, where you can walk in and it actually measures top to bottom your body. It makes you spin around and whatever, right? You get your fit. And now you can use those fit measurements to then understand what and how to buy and how to tailor from the variety of different fashion retailers that are out there. So there's a whole lot of innovation going on in the fitting space, exactly because of what you mentioned earlier, that you buy something, it comes home, it doesn't feel the same, doesn't fit right, and you have to return it.
As always, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Like, you know, I want awesome technology now, but actually that Fitmatch sounds fantastic too. That sounds like a nice, simple way.
You know what I would like? I'm a fashion coward, totally a fashion coward. I hate trying out. I hate buying. It's really I feel it's terrible. What I would like is a chat bot who doesn't judge me that I can have on my phone that can tell me this shirt really does not look good on you.
Right, right. Yeah. Doesn't sneer when it does it. Doesn't go, or it doesn't pretend like it looks great because it wants you to buy it. It just simply says, no, right? That's not for you. Yeah. Try this instead.
It looks great on you. Yeah. No. It doesn't look great on you.
You look terrible. Yeah. You look fat in those pants.
That's awesome.
So I
but
guess
it needs to be a chat bot, not a real person.
No doubt.
And, you know, I think that is the commentary. Maybe, you know, where is tech going? I keep getting drawn back to that customer experience. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's around the customer experience, if it's in the fitting room, if it's improving customer experience, just such a premium being put on that, and even maybe more so now, meaning people want to spend a little less time in the store, right? I mean, it's still necessary to go. I still want to, you know, whether it's in a restaurant or in a retail, still got to go, but let's make really efficient use of my time when I'm in that environment. So technology that gets around that, I think, would see a little bit of growth. Any other cool stuff coming down the line there, Sunil, that you're in tap with? I mean, are we going to see the minority report when I walk into the retail and it says, "Hi, Dean, you know, here are the five things that you, how was that sweater you bought last time?" Or what other cool tech's coming down the line?
You know, I think the number one place where cool tech is growing and will likely keep growing is in personalization. So people are going to do some really, really, really cool things to personalize the experience specifically for you. And some of us might find it really eerie and weird at first, and some others might really enjoy that things are becoming so relevant and so specific to what you want. It's almost like someone out there in the ether has read your mind. And it's scary to a point, but really effective. So I'm looking forward to a lot of personalization. And when we talk about personalization, we think customization, right? We think make burger your own way or make your pizza your own way. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about true empowerment. And the cosmetic industry, for example, has done a real good job at it. It's what is your skin type? And now I'll allow you to make your own formula for your own skin type that nobody else has because you're unique. That kind of empowerment and that kind of transparency is really what I'm looking forward to from both retail and hospitality.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I agree with you. I love that world too, and I'm with you, John. You know, I want the technology now, but right. I also giggle sometimes because I know the data scientists and the programmers in the background have got to be so flustered on occasions like this. I'll go on to Amazon and I'll browse, and I know their AI's in the background trying to figure out, oh, since you browse this, you might like this, and you know, and they're trying to connect the dots and give me a better customer experience. Totally get it. But when my 8-year-old daughter logs in as me and starts looking at, you know, Descendants dolls and clothing, I mean, it just flummoxes the system. Yep. So we were just trying to personalize this jean set to you, but wait a minute, do you want ruffled jeans or do you want...
Right. Yep. Yeah,
I don't know.
I find that fun with just with like the stuff that follows you around the internet even too, like the ads, the targeted ads.
Yeah.
For some reason, my... like browsers think that I'm a middle-aged woman, I think, or not even middle-aged, like maybe like, you know, late 20s, early 30s.
Well, what are you browsing?
Who is, I don't know. That's just it. Like, but like every time I'm on, there's a few different sites. Every time I'm on them, it's always ads for like high-end fashion for younger women. And I'm like, this isn't me. I'm sorry.
I
like,
think
you
this
know,
is your
like,
wife logging on.
Maybe,
you.
Maybe that's what she's doing. Maybe she's sneaking on my computer on the side and browsing around, which, you know, that's fine. You know, I don't care, but yeah, it's kind of strange.
The simplest form of implementation I've seen, and I love this example. Sephora, many months ago, there was a post on LinkedIn on this. They had two colored baskets, a black and a red, and a sign that says, if you want to be assisted, pick up the red, and if you don't want to be talked to, pick up the black. No tech, no screen, no nothing. Just like a simple communication that says, if you don't want anyone to approach you and bother you, just pick the black and we'll know not to come. It's just, it has to be that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I love that. That's perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, this conversation could easily have gone on for another half an hour. I think we've talked about some great stuff, but we do want to move over to our recurring segments. If any of our listeners, though, want to weigh in on this, give us some of their opinions, ask questions about some of the future technology, you can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod or email us TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com.
Because we can always bring Sonal back.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
have more conversations. Yep. So
that is precisely what I was thinking. If someone has a great idea and they want to hear more about it from an expert, we are happy to bring her back and talk about this, because she definitely knows a lot more than we do.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, but I do want to shift over to our recurring segments. We're going to talk first about the value to the VARs. And the question that I kind of had here is, thinking about VARs, looking, you know, to capitalize on the future of retail mm-hmm. technology, where do you think they should start? How should they position themselves? It sounds like there's a lot of different directions they can go. But Sonal, where do you think that VARs should start if they're wanting to get the message out, like, hey, we're here for you for more than just your standard POS needs?
Yeah. Well, so I like to think of this in a couple different ways, right? The VAR really does things that nobody else can do, and so they're really, really important to the ecosystem. 80% of that dollar actually does get spent in the store, so stores aren't going to go away. Store tech isn't going to go away, right? I think what's really key for VARs in today's environment is a couple of different things. One is that there's a lot of big juggernaut barriers that are being broken down in tier one and tier two retail and hospitality. And those end users are looking, searching for new niche solutions that can better their experience, make them more secure, make their deployment faster, cheaper, better. There's a million reasons for them to go after it. So the first thing I would say to the VARs in terms of how they position themselves is don't be afraid to position net new, because customers are absolutely looking for different ways to do it. So that's one. The second is much more, I would say, solution focused than product focused for the customers out there. So when and a VAR is in an absolute perfect position to do that, because they can bring the best of breed together, the best of breed manufacturers and the best of breed ISV solutions, the best of breed deployment capabilities. So they are truly in this position where they can do that best of breed collection and present a retailer or an end customer a full solution. And that's what we hear time and time again from our end users. Don't talk to me about products. Talk to me about solutions. So that's the second. And the third one I would say is that it's really important to understand the software side of the house and how that software solution integrates with the rest of their backend. So keywords here would be API connected. It's real key that what they're positioning is API connected to the rest of their infrastructure modules. So they're not putting in front of their retailer a solution that has to sit on the side or that somebody has to spend a whole lot of time and energy trying to integrate or having manual processes around it.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, when I think about it, there were, geez, you stole a couple of my thunder here, Sonal, but that's okay. Because one of my value to the VARs, you know, a word that was used a lot years ago, I'll bring it back, disruption. Disruption often brings opportunity. And when you think about it from the VAR perspective, you know, a lot of resellers, I used to be a reseller myself. I understand this. You get into a comfortable groove with the technology that you have, your engineers, you know, it's a small company, maybe 8-10 employees. You guys know what you're doing and you're kind of humming along. But when you have disruption in a pandemic, we'll remind you of that. There's opportunity out there. And so now one of the things that I took away when I was listening to you is, you know, you cannot be afraid of the ecosystem. You have to understand that there is a broader ecosystem out there. Go ahead and embrace that and embrace these best of breed individuals. The other thing that I wrote down is you can lean on your manufacturer. I think that she mentioned that earlier, that companies like Elo have very robust programs that are out there tapping into this wild west of software development mm-hmm. companies. Lean on them because they've got individuals that are in it for the right reasons. You know, they're trying to develop solutions that are going to be meaningful, impactful, and that will work. You know, mm-hmm. they're not there just to try to get the next quick buck, if you will. So lean on your ecosystem. I think that that's part of the value that we can learn here as well. What do you think, John?
I don't have a heck of a lot to add to that. I think from like the marketing perspective, because I do, you know, mm-hmm. a decent amount of marketing campaigns around software solutions and, you know, integrated solutions. And I do find that retail is one of the hardest nuts to crack sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is because sometimes the partners that come to us and say, hey, we want to put out a solution, and we do try to steer them in the right direction from that. But they might say, hey, we've got a POS, you know, system available, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's just our general POS, but we think this market might like it and we'll kind of tweak it a little bit and rename it for that market mm-hmm. rather than thinking through like, hey, what do we need to do to actually tackle that market in its mm-hmm. entirety? Mm-hmm. What do we need to offer that's different from, you know, maybe approaching a furniture retailer is completely different than approaching a clothing retailer mm-hmm. or something, you know, like, and I feel like when you're able to go to someone with a solution that talks to their specific market and environment, mm-hmm. it paints a very different picture than just saying, we've got a POS system,
yeah,
we've got some hardware,
yeah,
you probably need that stuff. Then most likely they're just going to look at you and say, we already got that. You know, why should I go through this time and change and effort and money mm-hmm. to switch to your system when you're not telling me anything different than what I can already do other than maybe like one little tweak? So I think it's very important to kind of, you know, like you said, build that ecosystem, mm-hmm. be prepared with a solution, and pick your target audience and go after them with what matters to them. Understand who they are. My two cents.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Well, we want to wrap up with our favorite segment, which is What's Tech Connecting with You? This is where we get a chance to talk about some of the fun, cool stuff that we are using, reading about, seeing, stuff in the world of technology that's exciting or interesting us right now. So, Sonal, I want to start with you. What's Tech Connecting with you right now?
You know, as I said earlier, it's the people behind the tech that inspire me more so than the tech itself. So whether it is, you know, the way Square disrupted so many industries in just solving one simple problem for that mini retailer, or it's Elon Musk decided to put $100 million of his own money in do a mission to Mars. I mean, that it's ridiculous almost in how the borders and the boundaries are pushed. The most loved story right now from my perspective is the 17-year-old boy who back in December before Christmas set up a COVID-19 tracker. And he's basically, he's developed this whole thing in his house, and it's a simple tracker that goes to multiple government sites of counties around the world and puts the right number of cases and deaths and recovered together. And this little boy has actually basically said he gets millions and millions of hits to his website now because it is a source of accurate and timely information, but he has denied making money from it. He has said, I am not going to start putting advertisements here and make money. And that purpose from a 17-year-old that says, I don't want money, I'm doing this A, for my own self, B, just for not having information that's false out there. That purpose is what I am inspired by.
That's awesome.
That's inspiring. Yeah.
Certainly not anything like what I was doing at 17.
Me too.
Or at, you know, 43 for that matter. So.
And I speak that, well, that's some generational stuff going on in there, yeah, exactly. Along the way. Well, I don't have anything that inspirational on the tech on what's tech connecting with me. But I'm going to tie in a lot of what we talked about here a little bit today. Real-time inventory, I guess, is where I was going to go with what's tech connecting with me. And because I had my first real experience with it. So as I mentioned, you know, I think everybody's trying to spend a little less time in the store or whenever you're in the store, make it most efficient use. So I was perusing one of the big box home improvement stores, and I saw that they had, I needed one thing so that I could repair my mower and mow my grass. And, you know, these are the basic things I got to get done, right? So they had one left, one left in the store. So got in my car. Okay, they got one left. And they actually had the bin, you know, the location, the aisle, the bin. So nice. I knew exactly where to go. I walk in the store. I go exactly to that bin. Now, a slight miss in the sense that the unit was there. It took me a couple minutes to find it. It was kind of kicked off to the side a little bit. So somebody had taken it off and put it off to the side. But I did find it. Anyway, that really improved my customer experience. That was the first time I actually said, okay, this is exactly where it is. Let's see if I can go find it. Boom, it happened. I was in and out of the door very, very quickly. That was kind of cool. So yeah, I'm digging real-time inventory. There you go.
There you go. All right. So for my what's tech connecting with me, I'm going to start off with a slight musical cue.
All right.
Forgive me if this is terrible. If it is, our producer Mark can maybe edit it and throw in the real thing, but... We'll start off with something that probably could be familiar to you.
Ah!
Man, that was terrible.
Okay.
Wind of Change.
Yes.
The familiar Scorpion song.
Yes.
Big hit in the early 90s, particularly 1990s when it came out. Was for, you know, a fairly modest hit here in the U.S., but apparently it was a big global hit outside of the U.S., especially in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet Union. As the Berlin Wall was falling, as the Soviet Union was dissolving, as the Cold War was ending. Now, in particular, this is fascinating because there is a podcast called Wind of Change, which is all about an investigative reporter who got a tip from a friend of a friend who had been in the CIA that the CIA had actually written that song as a piece of psychological propaganda to kind of fester into communist countries.
I'll be darned.
To inspire them to think about change at this particular time.
All right.
So he's going down this rabbit hole of, is this true? Is it
legit? Were the Scorpions working for the
CIA?
Right.
Did somebody write this song and hand it to the Scorpions and say, record this, pretend it's yours, but we have a purpose for it? And it turns out along the way he finds out that there's a lot of other examples in the past of them using art and pop culture to kind of integrate into these countries and kind of, you know, inspire them during the Cold War to think about democracy and anti-communist sentiment. Mm-hmm. I won't give away any spoilers. I haven't actually listened to the entire podcast yet at the time we're recording. I think all episodes are on Spotify and they're coming out week to week everywhere else. It's only, I think, 8 episodes long. Highly recommended. It's a fascinating topic. It's an interesting deep dive into
Winds of Change.
Good podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah. I like those deep dive podcasts. You know, that get you thinking a little bit. I usually listen to podcasts when I'm running. So, you know, you just have your head down and I can get into a zone and I can get mentally there. So there you go.
I'll definitely give that one a try.
Yeah. Very good.
Well, we want to wrap things up. This has been a great conversation. Saul, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your insight.
Thank you for having me. It's been real fun.
Definitely. Good. And we just might have you back sometime because I think there's so many other topics in retail we could get into. And
absolutely.
You've got a lot of great ideas.
Yep.
But, you know, for Dean Reverman, thank you. So for Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. It's time for us to unplug. Until next time, stay connected.
Tech Connect Podcast is brought to you by Elo. Are your customers looking for a versatile POS system designed to hold up to the daily continuous use? Show them the powerful ElOPOS system. Purpose-built for point-of-sale, ElOPOS offers flexibility, durability for traditional applications and self-service.
All units come with an 8th-generation Intel processor, Wi-Fi, and BLE 5.0 for third-party device connectivity, plus an integrated expansion hub ready for any and all peripherals like barcode scanners, customer displays, payment devices, and more. ElOPOS is customizable for any situation, offering various mounting and desktop options, along with 15 and 22-inch display choices.
Backed by a 3-year warranty, ElOPOS is the retail-hardened, modern, and reliable system. To learn more, contact your Blue Star representative or visit the Elo microsite at bluestarinc.com.